Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. It's already Thursday, February 23rd. We're back with you as always. We're reliable as hell, man, like a Swiss watch.
Except I was late yesterday.
That's okay. We're still a Swiss watch. You can plan on us being here.
Swiss
Somehow
watch.
We make it here.
There you go.
Yeah. So we have a very exciting show. We teased it. We have a very special guest, and we'll get to him in a couple of minutes. We got some great music to play that he brought us, so that'll be amazing. And I'm really excited. So you posted that you were in Santa Barbara yesterday. That was cool.
Yeah.
Right? Beautiful day, huh?
I was with my husband, and we're like, hey, I have the day off. Let's go and do Santa Barbara with the dogs. And
wow,
we did, and it was 2
idea.
Hours, and it was a lot of wine tastings. And
oh, so you tasted wine on the way, too?
No, just there in
just
Santa Barbara.
There,
yeah,
okay.
But it was
gotcha.
Just gorgeous, and it was like, wow, this is 2 hours away? What am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing?
Was that your first time there?
No, I had been there before, but I guess I thought it was more like a 6-hour, like, I'm kind of bad with where things are in life.
Okay.
So I did not know it was so close. It was delightful.
Yeah, Santa Barbara is very enjoyable to go to.
The vibe was like, slow down, chill out.
That's true, right? Ugh. Very different from LA.
So different.
Yeah.
So my goal now is to make enough money to live there. Ready?
Yes.
I got this idea.
Uh-huh.
Be on a house, and then, my agent's calling. I'll have to drive into the city.
Right.
The driver will drive me.
Okay, I
get
you.
Not a big deal.
Either that or a helicopter.
I don't
once
mind
you're successful,
a chopper.
Yeah.
I don't mind a chopper
exactly.
At all.
If you live in Santa Barbara, you'd probably be able to afford a chopper.
God, that's so the new goal. So saving pennies. For the big move.
I know.
No, but
know.
It was like, if you live in one of those places, you must just have a much lower amount of
you know,
tension.
Even if you go south of here, you know, you go to like Hermosa, Manhattan, places,
but see,
Redondo,
like,
it's laid back.
However, Manhattan Beach, you can't get a parking spot. So you're
That's
already
true.
Starting off really stressed. And
That's
second,
true.
It's a lot of like bros in
Manhattan there is
Beach.
A lot of bros.
And so like, it's not as much low tension. Like, Santa Barbara was like 60-year-olds. I was my kind of people, you know?
So it was slow enough for
Ugh,
you. Yeah,
great.
That's true, yeah.
Wow, we went on the pier and watched the sunset, drinking wine, having cheese.
Wow, there you go. That's the life. You see, after a few days of rain, that's the way to live, man.
God dang, it was wonderful.
You see, that's it, man. You got to show people, if I'm in Southern California, I got to live like
Yeah, and I always love those ads that are like, California. And they're like, we're goofy. And they go into Disneyland and they're like, we also walk the mountains. And they go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm always like, God, I should do, I want to be in those ads. So every time I was drinking wine, I was like, I'm in that ad.
Yeah, right?
California. And we listened to California Soul. California Soul. It was so cool.
What's California Soul?
It's a song.
Oh, it
that
is?
That was in like a Toyota commercial.
Okay.
But it's like by, I think, Merla Shaw. Anyway, it's great. It's all like California. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we used to have a song here called I Love L.A. Did you know that?
I Love
that?
L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Randy
that
Newman?
That was Randy Newman's song.
Yeah, he's got some weird lyrics.
He does.
Sixth Street.
He looks weird. He sings weird, but his songs are cool.
So touching.
Yeah.
You put Randy Newman plus a Disney cartoon, and I am crying automatically.
Really?
He does great animation songs.
Remember he had a song called Short People? Short people got no reason
this
to live.
So stupid. My husband played me this, and I'm like, first of all, racist. Second of all,
but that was back then.
Who make fun of short people?
Right.
And said you shouldn't live.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, he's America's pianist. No, he's not. He's a rude man because I'm short.
That was way back in the 80s, though.
Who cares?
So
who else in the
different.
80s is like, the short people like
that's
bullying
true, right?
was really rampant in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, you probably would have loved this billboard. Did you see this billboard from North Carolina? Somebody set it up and it says, real men provide, real women appreciate it. And people are saying it's sexist.
Wait, why would I love that?
Because it's sexist.
Wait, why would I like that, though?
Because you'd have something to say about it.
Oh, I see. I thought you were like,
I meant like you love it
in a fiery way?
Sarcastic way.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that sounds real rude and unnecessary.
Really? Okay.
You really need a billboard for something?
No, but I guess it's some people that are extremely, opposed to the status quo or whatever, to the modern times.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're absolutely, and hey.
But that's traditional, isn't it? I mean, they would say that, but this is traditional.
Yeah, but it's 2017. We're not in traditional anymore.
Why?
Because we're breaking. Because women aren't getting traditions. Paid 50% less than you are. That's why.
Yeah, but that's not. Oh, so you think that's what they're talking about?
No, I'm just saying we're not traditional. Also, means is like a nice thing to reminisce about. Right. However, when you're like make America great again, for instance, you're thinking of nostalgia. But for like Black people and women, it wasn't such a good time. That's you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So traditional is very biased of who you're speaking of, because it wasn't great for a housewife who wasn't making any money and wanted to be a painter. You know, and nowadays. Mm. You can.
But were they really unhappy because of that?
Yeah.
They were.
Yeah. I would think so.
I don't see that women in previous generations were miserable.
Because they weren't allowed to say anything.
I don't know. I mean, it started.
My mom and her generation were the first in the 60s to really break out and had the birth control pill and were allowed to be just as out there as women. Their mothers had it much harder. My grandmother was like, all I wanted to do was paint, and she had to be a typist. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of frustration.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying some women shouldn't appreciate, but I'm also saying that's a world in which you are a bit tied down as a female, in which like a woman can also.
But some people, some women prefer to live like that, right?
Hey, okay, I love and I'm not saying that's not good. I'm just saying, and their opinion is valid. I just think, why the billboard?
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I hear it. I don't know. I wonder who put it up. They're not really saying the billboard owner is just I'm the messenger. So
yeah,
he wants to clean his hands up.
The poor billboard guy. Yeah. There's a billboard on Melrose that says something like, "Hey, Victoria, please take me back."
Really?
And I'm like, oh, this poor guy.
Wow. You know what? Billboard, you talk about billboard in Hollywood. I saw one the other day called asking you to download an app called Sugar Dating.
Sugar dating. Okay,
and it says sugar models.
Is it like pastry chefs getting together?
Do you really think so?
No, I don't. Okay. I think it's sugar daddies.
Sugar daddies. Oh, that's exactly what it is.
Wow.
And right there, and it's like it's acceptable. You know, it's like right there in a big billboard, and they're saying, hey, go and become a whore, you know?
Well, hey, that's just as interesting on one side as the other billboard you talked about.
That's true, right?
Hey, if you're open and okay with it, why not? If you're both mutually okay with the inconsensual about it, why not?
I know, but to put it in a billboard so big, you know, people start asking what that means.
See, I don't like the Ashley Madison billboards. They're like, hey, cheat.
Do they have? Oh, they do,
on the
right?
way back from the airport, it was like, come cheat with us? And I'm like, how is
but
this?
But they changed it now. Now it's something else. It's something like find adventure or something. Because, you know, after they had the whole big thing with the hacking and stuff, they decided they're going to.
You know,
so they have a new CEO and everything.
Yeah, talk about the place that needs to be anti-hacked is Ashley Madison.
Which
sounds like a furniture company, I think.
Right.
Anyway.
But they were hacked big time, you know.
But imagine that list is the one group of people that never want to be hacked. You've got to be really good about your computer safety.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And it's funny because once we actually interviewed the CEO, the previous one, Bitterman on the show, a couple times on the phone, and we asked him about it and stuff, you know. So that was interesting.
How does he feel morally?
Well, I guess he's okay with it, you know, because because
I mean, that's weird, right?
And
you agree,
Sam? They're saying that people also look for like threesomes there and things like that, like married people and stuff. But
I see.
But no, I mean, look, the thing is, people are going to cheat.
Have you heard of Thrinder? That's for threesomes.
Thrinder. Oh, Thrinder.
Thrinder. Yes.
Oh, wow.
I know. Now we're talking really niche.
Menage a trois here, right?
Yeah. Menage a trois.
Wow. Oui. There you go. But of course.
You love that.
We always talk French here.
You always do. Who's that character you do? The cartoon?
Pepe Le Pew.
The most offensive cartoon
Right? I'm the locksmith of love,
I
love that because he holds a key, you know?
Love it.
He locks so the cat in the room. And he's, I'm the locksmith of love.
That is so stupid.
Yeah.
That guy would chase women who didn't want him around. I'm God, that guy is so offensive.
That's why I like it, though. Because I'll tell you why. Because I don't look at it like that. I look at it as it's a cartoon, and this guy's a hopeless romantic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that he thinks he's like the God's gift to women.
Yes. What is he, a skunk?
He's a skunk.
Oh, that's funny.
So nobody likes him, you know?
Pepe Le Pew, the skunk.
And it's always the cats that get a paint spilled over them, and they get this white stripe. So he thinks they're skunks,
too. Oh, so he's going after
female skunks.
Okay, so this is really quite on the nose here. I see. The skunk.
And it's always the same story.
It's going after the pussycats, and he's a real skank. Okay, this makes sense now. I didn't realize there was a whole like backstory to this.
Yeah, there is. Okay. Yeah, it's always cats. He never finds like female skunks, you know. Huh. So it's always cats, and they don't like him, you know.
No, they don't.
Because you would think if he found female skunks, they might actually like him.
Interesting.
So for the story, it has to be.
I feel this. Wow. For the constraints of the story.
Yeah, right. But you know, I always say, thank goodness for Mel Blanc, right? With all these thousand voices, you know, all the Looney Tunes voices that he's done, and they're so different from each other.
And like the visions and to come up with that.
Right, and create a character.
And like, for instance, like Seth MacFarlane, right? He was coming up with Family Guy when he was in college. At 23, he started Family Guy. He had already done his thesis using Peter.
Really?
So those people are just born that way. They have those voices in their head.
Right.
You know? So it's crazy to think he had all of that. It's crazy. Then you watch it now, and it's like the Roadrunner. I'm like, he's never going to catch him.
Right.
Why am I watching?
Right.
But it's delightful.
Because if you like some, they give you more and more and more of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like sequels, you know?
Yeah, I guess. But it never concludes.
No, it never ends.
There's no resolve.
Because if it is, there won't be any more. No, he'll eat him.
Yeah. It's terrible to think about. But anyway.
And Bugs Bunny, the same way. He never gets caught, you know?
No,
he's
your ultimate, like, smooth. Yeah. I kind of had a little crush on Bugs, to be honest. He's not only fictional, but he's an animal. But I did. Yeah. He's cool. He's like Tramp from Lady and the Tramp, which was also my first crush.
Really?
You know, the dog?
Yeah, the dog.
Which is really inappropriate. Yeah. But he was raspy and alpha.
Yeah.
And he got food for free.
Wow. You see, it's funny how, as kids, we relate to these things.
Very strange.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe it was just me.
Yeah, man. I don't know, you know, but I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's get to our guest right now, who's sitting here patiently, and I know he's dying to talk. We have Mr. Donnie Most in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir. And you know what? We never clap here.
I clap
for anybody.
Every time. Come
really?
You never hear
yes,
me.
Yes, the other day was maybe the first time.
Oh, no,
but
yeah.
We never clap.
No,
so welcome to the show, Donnie.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And I think what most people tell you is probably that you pretty much look the same as you did when you were in Happy Days, right?
I get that sometimes.
You get that,
yeah,
right?
I get it. And every once in a while, I'll get the total opposite. Somebody go, boy, you got a lot older.
Oh,
really?
God, that's
well,
so mean.
Duh,
that's
you know,
so
but
mean.
But I mean, people change a lot when they get older, and
yeah, you look exactly
so
the
recognizable.
Same.
Oh, well,
you
that's
know,
great to hear.
So yeah, so and I bet you were like in the clouds, having gotten the role of Ralph Mouth on Happy Days. Now, when it started, did you guys have, or at least did you feel this was going to be big when you got the part?
You know, when I did the pilot. When I was shooting the pilot,
yes,
I had a really great feeling. Ah, there we go.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now I hear
Let's
myself.
Turn that up,
yeah,
baby.
I'm sorry. I had it a little low, yeah. Is that better?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Okay, he can hear himself now.
So I remember calling my parents, because I grew up in Brooklyn, and I was out in California. I didn't know a lot of people yet.
And, wasn't it like your third audition?
No, I mean, I'd been auditioning. I'd been doing stuff in New York for years
before that.
And then when I went out to L.A., I got three other guest roles on
got
TV
it.
Shows and a bunch of auditions. And it was like my fourth show out there.
Oh, nice.
I see. Okay,
nice.
So it's not like the first time. I mean, you had to work to get to something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd been pursuing it. I was singing before I was acting, and I was singing in a sort of nightclub review when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
Up in the Catskill Mountains, up in the hotels. And then I started going to acting class, and then going on hundreds of auditions and doing, I did like 40 commercials, a lot of big national commercials and some small TV.
So you were successful early on. I mean, you were talented. You were born to do this, right?
I think I was born to do it. When I was 9 years old is when I really knew I wanted to. But getting back to that question, when we were doing the pilot, I just had a really good feeling of when I saw who the cast was and the way everybody was working together and the chemistry and Gary Marshall being our exec producer and creator and just the vibe. So I remember calling my parents one night and said, you know, I have a good feeling about it. I think this could really be
could
something.
Be a,
you know?
Just a major American classic. Yeah,
But you know, I know they were thinking, well, I'm just being have wishful thinking.
Totally.
Yeah. Because you know, if you're doing a pilot,
you're hoping.
You always
hoping.
Think it's the one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I knew they. But I just had a good feeling. I don't think I ever could have imagined it becoming as huge as it did. But I just thought it could be something pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
When did you know that this was something different? When did the cast really feel that, okay, we're not just something. This is something special.
Well, you know, like I was saying, I was feeling it even before it might have been represented in the ratings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I felt it. And, mm-hmm. and especially when Jerry Paris came on to be our director after the pilot. And Jerry's a, he was a comic genius. He directed all the old Dick Van Dyke shows, and he was the next door neighbor.
Nice.
And just a brilliant director. And when he came on, and then the way we were all working, I really felt like we had something. And the first year, we were a minor hit. We mm-hmm. had good ratings.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it wasn't a huge hit. Mm-hmm. It,
right.
it was
okay, yeah.
It was a, sort of a nice little new show that right. was getting some attention. The second year, our ratings went down, and we were on the verge of not being picked up for a third year.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. And then what happened was, because we were shooting at one camera not in front of an audience, more like a movie is shot.
Right.
But a lot of the big comedies back then, like All in the Family and Maude, they were shot in front of an audience.
Right, right.
And so I remember Jerry Paris, when I guess the ratings were going down, he suggested that we be a three-camera show in front of an audience. A lot of people resisted it because they said, but it's about the 50s, and it had like an American Graffiti feel,
mm-hmm. yes.
and you're going to lose a lot of that when you're not shooting it in the drive-in uh-huh. with the cars, and you're mm-hmm. not...
It changes it.
It yeah. changes
the flavor,
it's,
yeah.
It's
you
more,
did more like on location. You had a lot of outside shots,
we
right?
We had a lot of outside stuff,
yeah.
you know, the drive-in restaurant and with the girls in the roller skates and the,
right,
and,
right. kind of,
and the cars pulling in. So this was going to change it, but he felt we had a great cast for it. And then they decided, the head of the network, they also decided, let's make Fonzie, whose character was getting really popular, make him more of a, instead of a supporting role,
mm-hmm.
Like a leading role.
Mm.
And so they had him move into the Cunningham garage,
yes,
apartment upstairs. And so then a combination of that and the different format, which had a different vibe, which at that time was popular. And, you know, it was a combination of a lot of those things that all of a sudden then our show...
magic.
It just
clicked
together.
And some
other
writers
huh?
that came in, too. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
it just...
Clicked.
And that year, we shot up to, I think, by the middle or end of the year, to number one.
Wow.
Do you remember what year that was?
Yeah, it was our... Like it was 19...
30
well, we came on in 74. We did sort of like two seasons in the first year. So yeah. it was probably 77? Late 75 into 76.
76, yeah. You see, this is cool because this is the year I came to the United States.
Whoa.
And I discovered you. I mean, I was
That's
telling...
That's insane.
You know, I was telling Tori, I said, you know, I was 16 years old. I would walk on the streets and there were all these huge posters of you guys and the Fonz and everything.
Wow.
I'm like, what is going on? Who is this? But I'd remembered I'd seen American Graffiti.
Yeah.
And I could relate to this. And I, you know, and half of the wow. stuff you guys were saying, I didn't even understand yet. My English wasn't perfect, but I could connect with you guys so well
wow.
that it really hit the crowd in the 70s, I think. You know, we
yeah.
could relate to it. I don't know if a show like that would succeed as much today. Do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, the 50s were popular for, it seemed to just hang on for a long time where mm. So many generations liked going back to that. The music, I guess it was the sort of carefree, happy-go-lucky feeling that it had. The music had, there was a simplicity to
yeah,
it.
Americana
right.
was big. Yeah,
right.
it was
yeah.
very much like we're all together in this. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, today now it still could be a nice escape from the craziness that and the different pace of life that everyone's in. So I think to some degree it could be popular, but maybe not as much as back then. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I always loved? Fonzie uh-huh. was always like the cool guy, but he was never a bully. He was always like a really good,
that's true,
hearted
right?
Oh, yeah.
guy.
Yeah, he was
oh, right.
And
hearted.
You don't see characters like that without yeah. being just like real jerks. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
That's true.
The leather jacket and everything.
He
you
was
see
the,
him as
the
like
alpha
a bro,
male, but not in a mean way.
In like
yes.
the nicest possible way to the
yeah.
warmest people, you
well,
know?
Well, he had real heart.
Really? He did.
Yeah.
And, you know, him, mm. Winkler always had that come through, but that character was written in a more three-dimensional way, I think.
Well, he made
created,
it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
I mean, the way it was originally written, I don't think it was as, I don't think they intended, no one knew the vulnerability that he could bring to that character.
That's what it was. That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I think that's why after people saw him outside the character, they're like, wow, he's so nice. You
know? Could not be nicer. And I've only met him once and I'm like, that guy, he must have been great on set.
Right. Well, you see, that's the thing. He was nothing like the character. Right. But he was a very serious actor. I mean, and we used to get into a lot of discussions, and that's why I was recognizing I think people in the beginning thought, oh, it looks like a bunch of, you know, kids just kind of goofing off and being themselves and having fun. And that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. We worked really, I mean, we did have a great time because we enjoyed it so much and we got along so well, but we took it seriously and worked very hard to make it look easy. And I was nothing like Ralph. I wasn't in high school. I was never the jokester or the comedian. Mm. I was more like Richie. I was pretty quiet and shy and introverted, you know. But I knew, and my friends would be telling jokes all the time, and I was like their audience.
Right.
You know, I was not that guy at all.
Wow. Right. So there you go. So that speaks a lot of volumes about your talent as an actor to be able to become someone totally different from who you are.
And that's the joy to me of acting, you know.
Right.
And then the double-edged sword of that is then when you get on something that's very successful and then people think of you that
you
way.
You are Ralph.
Right.
That's right. That's my next question is how do you psychologically, people think that. How do you kind of deal with that in your everyday life of like, when someone comes up to you, what is your thoughts going through your head? Like, I'm not that person. Do you get angry? Are you like Buddhist about it?
Well, you know, back in the day when it was in its prime and everybody knew you, and there was a certain kind of ambivalence and mixed feelings that I'd have about it. On one hand, at the beginning, it was incredibly excited when people recognize you and want your art. I mean, it was like,
it's
oh,
huge.
My God, it's like you're living in this dream. But when it's 24/7 after a while, and then when you see that people are thinking of you like you are this guy, and you're going inside, well, you know, I want to do so many other things as an actor. Set out to be an actor to play one character my whole life.
That's right. Right.
So I had mixed feelings about it, and it was difficult, you know, especially when I was off. When I decided after the seventh season not to renew a contract, same year that Ron left, the two of us, after seven seasons, you know, I wanted, and it was tough to even get auditions for the kinds of roles. For example, the first couple of roles I got before Happy Days were dramatic.
Mm.
I played a guy who wound up becoming a paraplegic after an accident.
Oh, wow.
In emergency. I did an episode of Police Story where I played this sort of a psycho mad bomber.
Wow. Really? So, like, much different, very different.
Ranged. But then I couldn't even get auditions for those kinds of roles.
See, that's got to be really, as an actor, that's frustrating.
Let me ask you this, though, Donnie. I mean, you realize they pigeonhole you as a comedic actor. Why not capitalize on that then?
Yeah, I would have done, you know, I would have done more comedy if it was the right kind of comedy. And I wasn't, you know, part of the thing at the beginning, I created even more of a challenge for myself than I maybe should have, is I told my agents after the show, I don't want to do a television series. Mm. And I want to just do, maybe a TV movie or miniseries and film and theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting offers to do some other series, but I just didn't want to do another series at the time.
That's 7 years. I mean, that's a long time, right? Seven seasons.
You want to change as an actor. You want to grow.
I hear you. So, even when it's something very successful, you want to do something else.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, that might have been, maybe I should have done another show where I could have slowly
transitioned.
But I was wanting to make the transition like that.
You and I are the same, my friend. I want it to be like that. Yeah. I totally understand.
And that was tough. So, I mean, I eventually started working more and more, and you know, but it was, it took a lot of determination, perseverance, and emotional ups and downs.
Yeah.
For sure.
So it was actually an uphill battle for you after Happy Days to find yourself and who you are as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, I wound up doing theater a lot.
Go to theater.
To keep the chops going and work out. And even it was places that nobody knew I was doing theater. So that kept me sort of sane, you know, and fulfilled on a creative level. And then eventually, you know, and I also said, okay, I'll do, now I'll do TV in terms of guest spots after a while. And I started doing more of that. And I've done all kinds, you know, from Star Trek Voyager to The Crow to Men of a Certain Age, and then a recurring role on Glee just a few years ago.
Nice.
And then a lot of independent films. And then I directed.
And then you directed your own films.
Yeah, like three
full
now.
Features, right?
Three.
Tell us what
wow.
they are.
The first one was a very high kind of you know, intense drama. Mm-hmm. Two high school kids that would normally have nothing to do with each other. One, the girl, the daughter of very religious parents in Central California, very repressed and insulated, and then a son of a migrant farm worker, and he. These two would normally have nothing to do with each other, but under very heightened circumstances, they get forced together.
Mm. Wow.
And at first, it's like a hostage situation, and then it slowly develops into a relationship between them.
Wow.
It's called The Last Best Sunday. Really interesting film.
Yeah.
And then I did a comedy several years later. Comedy, drama, you know, starts out comedic, and then it slowly kind of has a lot of heart, like
uh-huh.
we talked about, called Moolah, as in money.
And money, yes.
And then I did a family film called Harley's Hill, girl and horse kind of story.
Oh, I love that.
That's very nice. So where can people see these films now?
On Amazon, you can get them. On Moolah, you can stream it on Amazon on demand, you know.
Cool.
And the DVDs are for sale. Same thing on The Last Best Sunday. That's the best place.
So directing became a thing for almost a lot of cast members of Happy Days. So I wanted to know, Ron Howard obviously is the big now director, but
yeah,
I know
right.
Henry Winkler and you both. So were you introduced to the directing? Were they open for you guys to learn about it? Was it started there, or do you guys just happen to all have that background?
Well, and Anson has directed over 300 episodes of TV as well. You know, it was a great training ground. I mean, working with Jerry, who was fantastic, and then Gary Marshall directed us as well in episodes, and just being around that. And then there was an education at Paramount. I would go to I would crash the sets of certain films that were shooting there
really?
To watch.
Wow.
You know, like my favorite actor at the time was Jack Nicholson, and they were shooting Chinatown.
Oh my God!
So I went, you know, I crashed the set because I was in my 50s wardrobe, and they just thought I
you're on set.
You know, so they thought I belonged there, even though it was 30s, and I saw Nicholson and Polanski and all that, and then Ron and I, you know, Ron wanted to direct. From the time I met him, that was his
really
his vision.
He already knew. I mean,
he was a great actor, but he felt I need to do directing.
Well,
right?
He'd been doing it since he was three and a half, 4 years
yes.
old. So he had taken a semester at USC film school, and then realized I know everything that there
was. Yeah, he like learned it from being in life. Yeah,
yeah. So we used to go to see movies together and talk about it, and then he directed me when he wanted to prove that he could direct. He said, I want to make an experimental film. This was about the third season uh-huh. of Happy Days. And he said, I have an idea for a story and for you to play the lead. And you want to develop the story with me? And then we'll bring in an actress to play opposite you and a writer. And I want to do it experimentally where we do all these improvisations of the scenes.
Whoa.
Right.
And then with a tape recorder and then derive a lot of the script from that.
Nice.
So we started doing that. And we got about halfway through shooting this movie while we were shooting on weekends while we were doing
Happy Days.
On, during
two
the
very
week.
Different things.
Yeah. And then he got an assignment to direct his first film for Roger Corman and to be in it. But anyway, so working with Ron in that capacity was a great education. And then I did my first movie that I acted in was a small Roger Corman independent film by Roger Corman's company, directed by Jonathan Demme.
Whoa.
Who wound up becoming huge. You know,
yeah,
Silence
yeah.
of the Lambs
yeah,
and so many others.
Yeah.
And I was working.
So you were around wonderful directors all your life.
I mean, early on. Yeah. So incredible training ground. And that's why so many of us, you know, learned from as much as we could. And Gary encouraged that.
Yeah.
So Gary Marshall by then had already been a big producer-director, right?
He hadn't been doing films yet.
Oh, okay.
TV.
So he was
mainly
doing TV, right.
Yeah.
And that's where he was big, really.
He created the Odd Couple for TV with Tony Randall and Jack Klugman. He'd been a writer and producer on Dick Van Dyke. That's how Jerry knew. But so Odd Couple was his big thing at that time, and then Happy Days. And then there were all these spinoffs that we did.
Right.
And then he started doing films, you know, probably in the early 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And then it was Pretty Woman, and then it was over.
Yeah.
That was his big. Gary Marshall came and spoke. I went to Northwestern Theater and chair program, and he speaks there every year. And Gary, he was so funny, and he said he directed very casually. He said, he's like, if there's a boom in the way, you see the boom, who cares? But he seemed like a very kind guy, very, very nice guy.
Oh, wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
So for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Donny Most, and for those of you who don't remember
it, Happy Days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Happy Days, Thursday, Friday, Happy Days, the weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you.
Okay, so if you didn't know who Donny Most is, Ralph Melf, of course.
Yes.
And so I'm sure by now you're pretty much sick of being called that. But then again, you know, what I think when I know people are like, they have like a big role in something, and then they're like identified as that, I know it does get old, you know. I mean, we have Susan Olson, who's Cindy Brady also, mm-hmm. and she's been telling similar stories, you know, how it's like, first of all, the character is totally not you. And I would imagine, Donny, you wanted people to know who you are as a person, right?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, because that's a fictitious character, and it comes from your imagination, from other people you've known. And, you know, like I said, that's the joy of acting, is to play, for me, to play all different kinds of roles. So,
right.
You
have to understand from the fans' perspective, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? They feel you're doing a great job as that character.
Yeah.
And this is who I see him as, you know?
Here's the rub to that. My experience when I used to travel during that time is, I think the public was much more open to seeing me in other things than the powers that be out in Hollywood.
Sure.
Because when I would travel around, people would say, "Oh, when are we going to see in something else?"
Oh,
yeah.
Wow!
Yeah, I'd get that a lot. But what happens is
the industry,
they play it very safe because they figure, I guess they don't give the public enough credit.
No, they don't.
So they figure, okay, he's known for this, and they don't want to go out on a limb and do something where they'll say, no, for this kind of role, we already have. They like to compartmentalize.
Right. It's safe.
Very. It's safe.
That's
choice.
Yeah, the woman who played Nurse Ratched was like, not one industry had ever let me be read for another role. That was it. That was it.
She was so embedded
because,
in people's
minds. Because,
all
you see is now she kind of had a much deeper kind of thing, and that was a little terrifying. So I can understand that, but imagine.
Think of how wonderful she was in that.
And what she could have done, you know, in other roles.
Yeah.
You think, man, she had some broad range.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. It's like I said, it's a double-edged sword.
So let's move on a little bit from Happy Days and stuff. I also want to find out a little bit about you and your background and everything.
Sure.
But let's jump a little bit to the present now.
Okay.
Okay. And you're doing a lot of great things with music, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because apparently music has been a passion of yours as well, right?
It was my first, as I like to say, my first love. Mm. That's what I set out to do initially. When I was 13, 14 years old, I started going to a school in New York City for singing and acting, and they made me take tap dancing.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's how I got hooked. I got picked to be in this group to perform in the hotels and nightclubs in the Catskills that one summer when I was 15.
So you're saying everything started with tap dancing.
Well, that was like the necessary something that I had to do. But it was the great standards and the jazz bent and the Great American Songbook and swing and big bands that I loved, and then the artists that I grew to learn and love, like, you know, Sinatra and Nat King Cole and my Bobby Darin. I saw him when I was at the Copacabana when I was 18, and he was unbelievable. And Sammy Davis and Tony Bennett and some of the great big bands, you know, Count Basie and his Joe Williams was his singer, and even the great female jazz singers like Ella Fitzgerald and Diana Washington.
So this is the music you grew up with.
That's the music, and I mean, all my friends, and I loved, you know, what's now called classic rock. I mean, I loved it too. It was a renaissance time for music. You know, starting with the Beatles, and then the amazing sort of hybrid of and joining together of different styles of music, folk and rock and blues and jazz and
right. But
and
this
soul.
Was the '60s, and you grew up in the '50s, right?
No. I was in kindergarten at the end of the '50s, okay. But I mean, my teenage years were the '60s,
yeah. Right?
So that was when I'm influenced by music. So right. A lot of people thought I was a little. I liked that music, but what was in my blood was the. Was what was at that time looked upon as my parents and grandparents.
Yeah, it's old school for that, yeah.
At that time, that music was like not very
commercial. I see, okay, so you sort of like reached back. You felt you need to go back a little bit in your taste in music to the days of the big band.
Well, this is what I've loved my whole life.
That's what I'm saying.
Even from back then till you know, 3 years ago when I said I'm going to, when I saw that this style of music had come back again.
I was going to say, now it's back.
Really?
You know, oh, wow, yeah, it came back in a big way. You know, it started with, you know, Harry Connick doing it and Tony Bennett on MTV.
Yeah.
Now with Lady Gaga, but Michael Bublé and Diana Krall.
Bublé is like the big crossover too.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I know he's like Sinatra light. I do get that and a lot of but he created that sound to come really roaring back.
But it started even before that with Natalie Cole when she did album of her dedicating to her father and Diana Krall and artists like Steve Tyrell doing it now.
Alison Krauss sort of, yeah.
Yeah, so when I saw that, okay, now the music that I love when they wouldn't let me do it back in the 70s, now it's big, I decided I had to,
do it.
If I'm ever going to do it, this is the time.
Wow.
So I put together
cool.
an act and people were like loving what I was doing and I was getting great press. And then people were encouraging me to record, which eventually led me to my CD, which just came out last week.
Wow, congratulations.
That's so cool.
All right, so let's jump back right into it.
Yes.
What's the name of the CD?
D-Most, Mostly Swinging.
Ooh!
D-Most, Mostly Swinging.
You got
swinging.
A great name. That's a good
name.
I like that. That's a good name.
All right, so we've got three songs here. We have After You've Gone, Blue Skies and I Got It Bad. Which one should we start with? Give us a little bit of background on this. So this is like big band type of style, right?
Swing? Yeah, this is swing. That's where it's mostly swinging. Yeah, this is 17-piece band.
Dang.
In one of the songs, I Got It Bad, it's got strings in there too. So it was hard picking out the songs, but you know, I started with like probably 100, and we've narrowed it down. I guess we should play the Blue Skies is the most up-tempo.
Yeah.
So we'll kick it off with that.
Are you playing an instrument or are you arranging and singing?
Just singing. I talked to my producer, arranger, Willie Murillo. We talked through it. I mean, he did the arrangements, but we talked about all of them.
Got it.
Sounds good. Okay, so Blue Skies, Donnie Most. Let's take a listen.
Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies from now on.
Great band, great.
Yeah, how can you not love this
I'm
kind
like,
of music, right?
You're tapping your feet, man.
Yeah. We're all dancing in
tap
here,
dancing
folks.
Over back here.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing.
Blue skies smile at me.
All right, I'm going to fade it, Donnie.
Oh, no, you got to hear the ending.
Oh, really?
Yeah, turn it up.
Oh,
no,
oh I'm sorry. I can't. Oh, man. No. So, because I can't, like, go back to that point again. Oh, I'm sorry. I
the
tell
best
you why.
Part is the
really?
End.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's leave it for people to get it.
All right.
I'll tell you why, though, Donnie. Because there's two more songs, and we're almost running out of time.
Oh, okay.
And there's still more
all
we
right.
need to talk about.
Right. Just know
we're
that the ending is where. The ending is really good. But we got great endings after you
Yeah, I mean, there's like climaxes all over this song. You know what I mean? It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Well, After You've Gone has a killer ending. So
really? Oh, so you want the whole one?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, no problem. Because I'm telling you, Donnie, we only have about a few minutes. Okay, so we'll play After You've Gone.
The whole thing.
And we'll talk.
Okay.
Okay,
yeah,
there we go.
Love you've ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it. There'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday when you grow lonely, your heart'll break like mine. And you
got some voice, Donnie. I'm telling you, wow.
Where do you hear? Where do you hear where this goes?
Yes.
After you've gone away. And after I'm gone, after the breakup, after I'm gone, you're gonna wake up. You will find you were blind. Got to let somebody turn around your mind. And after the years we've been together, the joy and tears, all kinds of weather. Someday, blue and downhearted, you're gonna beg to be with me back where you started. After I'm gone, after I'm gone, after I have gone
Yes, after
that
you've gone,
so
Donnie Most.
Whoa.
That
man,
so
you've got a voice on you, man. You
thanks.
Really do,
wow.
You know?
From all those years back when I was, you know, when I was doing it when I was younger and I took voice lessons from a lot of different teachers and then singing, you know, all the in the car and at home all these years. So I feel so fortunate and blessed that I'm getting to do this now at this level.
Yeah,
oh
when we
God.
Started talking about music, like you lit up, like totally.
Yeah, he's
the
full
energy,
of energy
the
now,
energy
right?
shifted.
Yeah,
completely.
He's about to explode.
Yeah,
though.
But that's how it is when you feel like I'm doing the flow.
Yeah,
I'm in the flow.
I could tell you went back into the time when you recorded.
Yeah,
like
I'm remembering being in right, the studio sure. with it and making sure the vocal was just right. Because
right.
what an arrangement, Willie Murillo.
Oh my God,
unbelievable! And how do you not get high as a kite
listening to
that stuff.
Now,
you know?
Let me ask you this.
Like La La Land.
When you record this, are these all real instruments? Or do you
Really? Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I mean, there's no computer sounds there?
No, no. And some of these, I'm doing a show at Vitello's in Studio City.
Really?
Oh, nice.
Wow, I'm coming.
On Wednesday.
Oh, nice.
This coming
I'm coming
Wednesday.
Too.
definitely you should come, because Willie and we're not going to have the full 17-piece band, which we've done live, but we're going to have still seven pieces, great all-star musicians.
The horns were amazing.
And we're going to have great horns on Wednesday, March 1st, Wednesday. At Vitello's.
I'm totally going to be there. And I'm going to get dressed up.
Do you know what time it is, Donnie? What, like 7 or
eight,
so?
8 o'clock. They open the doors at 6:30. And I have a really cool special guest, a female jazz vocalist, that's going to come up and do a duet with me that I love. So it's going to be a great show.
Wow.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, so if you guys want to catch Donnie Most in person and listen to some of this great music, Vitello's is up here in Studio City.
Yeah, I'm going to get really dressed up. Yeah. I like getting really dressed up for something like this.
Yeah, well, I'll be dressed up,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's called, like, upstairs at Vitello,
upstairs,
right?
Upstairs. They call it the E-Spot Lounge.
Okay.
E-Spot Lounge, yeah.
Okay, so they changed it. They used to call it upstairs at Vitello.
Yeah, now it's the E-Spot Lounge, and they gave it's better sound system now. Okay. It's really
nice.
Cool. And my Amazon or iTunes, Demos Mostly Swinging.
Oh, yes, God. And guys, go ahead and buy a download, buy the CDs. I mean, help the man feel that he's giving you something.
You know what this is good for? The soundtrack, when I listen to this type of music when I'm cooking.
Yeah, right?
It's very like, it's good and steamy in here. And I'm like, yeah. It's a good cooking song.
And the album is a real musical journey. I took a lot of pride and effort with Willie picking out the sequence of the songs. The order is really important, and it's a real musical journey. And ending with a bonus song, just to piano, me and piano.
Wow.
After all the big band, you know.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Who knew? Great
nice.
Voice.
Oh, thank
Such
you.
A good voice.
Thank
so
you.
Now, let me ask you this. When you record with so many musicians, do you think it takes longer to get the song just right, just because you have to coordinate more people?
Well, what we did, I mean, it was for economic reasons, but there's also a lot of more, you have more control. Willie brought in, like, the rhythm section first, laid down the tracks, then he brought in the trumpets, get that just right.
That's true.
Then the trombones and then the saxes. I came in afterwards after I've had a chance to really learn the arrangement perfectly to go in there and then do my vocals until we were happy.
That's incredible.
Yeah. What did you think about the, obviously, like La La Land is,
you must
have loved La La Land.
Oh my God.
Right? Now, and then what did you think about the Tony Bennett Gaga thing? Because I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, no, I love that they're doing this together.
Yeah,
I love it. I mean, she's an incredible singer, and he's been, a legend since... I listened to his records when I was way back when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
Used to sing along to Tony. I mean, I've seen him live.
I saw him live, too. He was great.
He's, unbelievable how good he's still sounding. So I love that they're doing that together.
He's bringing it back.
Yeah, and maybe I'll get to do a duet, an album with somebody really cool like that.
I think that'd be really neat. I like the two joining together.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
I know. I always like duets and things like that.
Everybody
brings their style.
Yeah, and I have a great duet on Demos Mostly Swinging with a wonderful singer named Becky Martin. We do Say Si Bone, which I knew Dean Martin's. Eartha Kitt originally did it, but I was familiar with Dino's version, and it's really good. It was Willie's idea to do it as a duet, and I have a feeling there's more duets in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they're
definitely.
Fun.
That's good. Well, at least, you're doing what you love to do.
Yeah.
I love
Obviously,
it, yeah.
most of your life, or all your life, you've been doing what you love to do, right?
Yeah, blessed. There were a lot of periods, though, after Happy Days where... like I said, it was a roller coaster, and where I wasn't getting to do it, where you we're fighting to get to do it, and so it was a step forward and maybe three steps
that
back.
That is my life.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
As any actor knows, that's it. Yeah, but when you have a hit like that, you want it to ride, but it's hard because you take peaks and valleys.
Oh, my God.
And people only see the peaks, but that's you remember the valleys.
Yeah, there's been a good body of work, but there were plenty of times where, I was going, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You just don't know.
Yeah. So that's scary.
Yeah, it can
get scary.
Yeah.
Now, were you able to build a little future for yourself from Happy Days? I mean, because I know some of the cast ended up suing the producers in 2011.
What we did was we were not suing the producers. It was... we had never gotten any money for merchandising.
Yeah, that's right.
For the merchandising.
I never saw a dime. None
really?
Of us did.
From all the posters and everything.
Lunchboxes.
There were so many.
Glasses and mugs and bed sheets even and everything. Shirt. And we had never seen a dime. So that wasn't right. Wow. And then what the thing that broke the straw that broke the camel's back was slot machines came out. Happy Days slot machines in casinos all over the country.
And you weren't getting any of that.
And, you know, and then we were getting...
Wow.
And it's like, what is going on here? Yeah. You know, I mean, that was it.
Yeah,
you know?
When that slot machine has your face on it, I'd like to get some money from that. Yeah.
So tell me something. How did it end up then?
We wound up settling.
Really?
Because some of us were saying, oh, no, we should go all the way to court and really get what we should get. But some of us were just not of the mind to want to go through all that.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of
true.
Drama.
That's true.
You made your point. Yeah.
That's true, and that's the thing. You made your point
if you want fairness.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Are you still close with people from
Hedges? Yeah, I'm very close with Anson. We talk all the time.
Oh, awesome.
And I just spoke to Henry like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them, And Ron Howard, are you still in touch with him?
Is
he like too big?
Well, he's pretty busy. We just emailed each other a few days ago.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we stay in touch and I'll see him.
How cool is that? And this is from like childhood,
Yeah,
I mean,
I was young. I was 20 when I started the show.
Wow. You were 20?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I always
that's still
pictured
young.
Younger, yeah.
Yeah, well, we were playing high
school.
That's
exactly right.
Exactly. Playing 16,
But you could tell you guys were older than who you were playing,
A little bit. Yeah. Although what made it work easier back then was in the 70s, everyone had longer hair.
Yeah.
Our hair got shorter, and we were wearing the clothes of the 50s. So
you looked younger.
Made us look younger.
Well, I don't want to go home, but we have to, Donnie. So
right. Such a good
thank
interview.
You for joining us. You're amazing. How can people find you?
DonnieMost.com and also Facebook. There's a
fan links.
Page, Don Most, and Most at Most underscore Don Twitter.
Okay, cool. And you can get all these links right there at DonnieMost.com. That's the easiest way to find it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Donnie.
Oh,
everybody,
so
go get his music. It's freaking awesome. I love it. And I'm going to be listening to it and see you at Vitello's next Wednesday.
I'll see you there with my tap dancing shoes on.
I'm really looking forward to it. And you're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun being with both of you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I forgot to say goodbye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.